Vietnam.
Yes.
And they get most of the facts right. But they miss the essence because it's an incommunicable experience. Mm-hmm. And memoirs are the place to find them. Mm-hmm. Their memoirs don't tend to be political. They tend to be realistic. I'm talking about guys with lead over their head.
Okay. Yeah. I have not read anything by Robert McNamara, and I probably will now.
Well, he wrote a book trying to excuse himself.
Yes.
Idiot.
Yes.
Idiot. Had a lot of a skill for no reason at all.
What I got from so many people is that the war shouldn't have lasted 6 months, maybe a year tops.
No, if we'd 2 weeks if they'd let us go when we went into North Vietnam the first time.
Yes.
We went to a place about 15 miles north of the DMZ. You know what I mean by the DMZ? Some ammunition dump, big ammunition dump. Mm-hmm. And they knew we were coming. There was no... We had guys on that mission from World War II, Korea, or both. He said, never seen flak like that anywhere. They knew we were coming. We only lost 6 that day. Mm-hmm. We're shooting them in the toes. We should have gone to Hanoi and shot them between the eyes if we're going to go to war. Oh, no. They didn't want to upset China, which was totally unprepared for war. They had no nukes. They had no Air Force. They had no Navy. We're worried about China.
Why were they involved then if they were unprepared?
I heard you, but I have no idea what you mean.
Why did China get involved? What was their motivation?
They didn't.
Okay.
We thought they would be. Well, okay. What they had was 1.3 billion, that's million with a B, people. Mm-hmm. And they thought, well, at a certain point, quantity becomes quality. They thought they'd come down and invade or protect the people. The communists, see? Mm-hmm. North Vietnam was communist. And they allowed the supplies to come through there and down the Northeast and Northwest Railroad. If you're going to go to war, you better be prepared for everybody. When I pulled nuclear, the United States was funded and equipped to fight the Soviet Union and China at the same time, and we would have done it. They were poorly prepared for a major war. Right now, we aren't, and they are getting there.
Yes.
Yeah. So if you're worried about somebody's going to do something, you say, well, I don't know, we better not. Better not get them too mad. They might come in and help these North Vietnamese. No. If you can't handle that, you don't go. I'm just stupid. Politically, it rains stupid.
Do you believe it was motivated by hope of money? I've
no,
heard about
not at
Seaboard.
All.
I've heard about...
No, okay. I don't think it had anything to do with money. I think Kennedy was terribly embarrassed about the Bay of Pigs. He was president then and went horribly. And when it came time to be tough, he started putting troops into Laos and then started the Green Berets, and he was going to show he was a warrior. And he was, by the way. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you better start.
Okay. This is Kara Vandery of the Ashland City Library, and today... we are interviewing Colonel John Morrissey about his experiences during the Vietnam War. This is funded by the National Endowment for the Arts Big Read Project and is being done in conjunction with Humanities Kansas. And, sir, just as a couple questions, you served in the Vietnam War. What branch of service?
Air Force.
What was your rank when you retired?
Colonel.
And where did you serve?
All the bases?
In Vietnam.
Vietnam. Mm-hmm. Well, I served mostly in Thailand. That's where the air war in North Vietnam was from. Mm-hmm. Created, done. I was at Tok Le, both Karat and Tok Le, the two F-105 bases. Mm-hmm. There were three other bases in Thailand. Uban and Udorn. They were F4s, and the Khan Phanom called it the Naked Phantom, but it was on the Mekong River, and they were the ones that had the rescue helicopters and aircraft that would go out and look for my mates that, were shot down.
Mm-hmm. I interviewed a man who worked with the Navy. He was back seat, and they would pick up pilots who had been shot down in the water, and that was their whole job, was to look for, because evidently they were paying the Vietnamese people to go get them.
Well, I'm not quite sure what you mean, because if you got shot down off the shores of North Vietnam, they wanted to get you and put you in jail or kill you.
Yes.
And we wanted to rescue you.
Yes. So, they tried to pick them up if they had been shot down.
Yeah.
But, okay, you enlisted.
No, officers don't enlist.
What do you do?
You volunteered.
Mm-hmm.
I was in ROTC, all volunteer.
Okay.
Just a terminology, but that...
But it matters.
Yeah.
Where were you raised?
I can't hear you.
Where were you raised?
Oh, raised. Kansas City area. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when did you volunteer?
Again, I went to KU to be in the Air Force ROTC program.
Oh.
So that when all state-funded schools used to have to do that. All of them.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, now you do.
Okay.
And so it's 4 years, and you go to classes every year as a freshman and sophomore. And then if you want to continue, then you're in the advanced program. And you get paid, I mean, it's $26 a month. And then when you graduated, you received a commission as a second lieutenant.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you were a second lieutenant, then you would, if you were physically qualified, could see, talk, and walk, and had a degree, you went to pilot training. Mm-hmm. If you were physically, if you didn't, maybe you went to navigator training or some other financial, something in the Air Force, plenty of people, very few pilots. Only 3.5% of the Air Force are pilots. The rest are support.
Okay.
Maintenance, payroll, bases,
mm-hmm.
buildings, engineers,
mm-hmm.
stuff like that. Anyway, so then in August of 1960, I became a second lieutenant. And the pilot training, we were cutting back, I don't know why, on everything, but Korean War is over. And so there weren't as many people going in the military. Typical Americans. After the World War I, we disbanded. World War II starts. We didn't have an aero club, Air Force big enough to be an aero club. Enough troops. Typical America. Nothing will happen to us until it does. So anyway, I went to pilot training. And it took a year because the cadets, the Air Force Academy people had to go first because they were getting paid full-time as soon as I got out.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Laredo, Texas. I thought, great, I'll be glad to get out of here. Kansas City was too hot in the summer and too cold in the winter. Talk about naivete. I went to Laredo, Texas. No air conditioners down there. Spent a year in pilot training and I finished first in class, so I had my choice of assignments. I think it was, let's just say, 38 people in class. I believe it was 38. And then personnel, one of the jobs not flying. Personnel comes in with all the different types of aircraft that need, accessions.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one F-100, and I wanted to be a fighter pilot worse than anything.
Why?
Because when you grow up in World War II,
mm-hmm.
and you see these fighters flying overhead, and, well, I mean, it was just, would you rather drive a Ferrari or a 16-wheeler?
Okay.
I mean, I love to fly, though. I mean, if you're going to fly, who wouldn't want to fly those? Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
So I finally got pilot training and I finished first, and I took the F-100 assignment, and I went to Luke Field in Phoenix. That's where all the F-100 training is done was done in those days.
Okay.
They had more trainers of 100s at Luke Field than we had in the entire Pacific in fighters. And that took about 9 months. Mm-hmm. And the first day that we went our squadron to learn to be fighter pilots, Keith Lukens got up and he said, "I'm going to mention something to you. Why are you here?" And of course, a lot of guys, he said, "Yeah, well, that's wonderful, but it's not why you're here. You're here to learn to kill people. You're going to do it with bullets or nuclear weapons. And if it bothers you, then now is the time to take another career field. Nobody get out of that room, because we remembered World War II, where if we lost, we'd have to learn a new language, mm-hmm. and we'd have to learn and use a new kind of money, and we wouldn't have much control over that." Mm-hmm. And I've always believed in the Republic, and I knew that the price of peace is eternal vigilance. Well, I wasn't going to watch from an office desk. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, got that done in 9 months, and it was a little rough in those days. I mean, 100s weren't fully baptized. I remember on two different occasions, we lost 5 in one day before sunup and noon.
In training?
In training.
Okay.
In fighters.
Okay.
One pilot, one seat, one engine. Then I went to Nellis and checked out, and I got an assignment, which I wanted, to the F-105, the newest and the latest, incredible airplane. And that was just, wow, it was unbelievable airplane. And so then my assignment from there was to go to Okinawa to a fighter wing. The wing has 3 squadrons. I went to 12 squadron, and the squadron has 4 flights in it, and the flight has about 8 people in it. And one of the primary jobs there was to sit nuclear alert 24/7.
Yeah.
We had it was the 18th wing. We had 18 on 5-minute alert. And targets in the center of Shanghai, ICBM sites in Siberia, and people like that. I mean, people in Japan were like that, but they couldn't have nuclear weapons up there by treaty, so they would go down to their base in Korea and set alert. And they were setting alert in Thailand and in Italy and in Germany and in England.
Yes.
I think that was about it. I mean, the fighters with nukes. Mm-hmm. And at the time, Soviet Union didn't have anything like that. China didn't have anything like that. The Korean War, they think we fought Koreans, but in the air war over North Korea, way up north, there were 4 bases in Mongolia, maybe 20 miles across the Yalu River, maybe not that far. Mm-hmm. And the Soviets had at least 500, not at one time, but about 300 at one time, they'd cycle through there to give their pilots some experience in a war. Only about 15 or 20% of those planes were flown by North Koreans. And we only had 186 F-86s there. And our kill ratio of them was about 9 to 1. 9 of them went down for every one of ours. Soviets in the Second World War used airplanes at the extension of artillery, not really air-to-air combat. Mm-hmm. But those MiGs were after the B-29s we were using to bomb the airfields in North Korea. And, of course, the B-29s were in no position to defend themselves from the MiGs. So we got the F-86s over and put an end to that nonsense. Stayed there. And then in January of 65, well, actually in December of 64, they took our flight, which remember 7 or 8, and then we took 6 airplanes down to Da Nang on a day's notice. You're always going to go somewhere on a day's notice or half a day. our job was to escort the EC, I'll tell you what they're in, C-130s that were going between Haiphong and Hainan Island with intelligence gear. There's voice, communications, linguists, and our job was to be top cover from them. Well, they shot down every MiG I ever saw, but there weren't any there. But a Navy destroyer down there with radar and nothing going on. So, went back, and then next month, at the end of the month, our squadron, I was sitting on nuclear. So that meant there were six of us from the 12th Squadron. They said, okay, 12th Squadron, guys, you can go home now. Home? And and pack, and you're deploying with the squadron in the morning. Mm-hmm. Be at the squadron at 7. To tell us where we're going. We got there, and we packed up and went to Da Nang. Mm-hmm. And there was an F-100 squadron from England Air Force Base, Louisiana. And we felt that we were going to, something was going to happen, of course. And then one night about 11 o'clock, of course, we were all at the bar, said, you must evacuate. We think there's going to be a mortar and rocket attack. You got to go to Karat. We'd never heard of Karat. I thought they said Clark. We were going back to Vietnam. Well, it was an interesting night flight over there. And when you light that burner, it turns midnight into noon. So we got there, landed, and stayed there and started flying missions into Laos. Remember Kennedy now. Mm-hmm. We can't keep those bad boys out of Laos. And then on the 2nd of March of 1965, Rolling Thunder began. That was the aerial attack on North Vietnam.
Okay.
That was the first flights we ever had to go into Vietnam airspace, mm-hmm. the Air Force. Actually, the Gulf of Tonkin, maybe a few of them got over the land, but others that were Navy guys, Alvarez, think were shot down. They were said that there were torpedo boats after the fleet. No, didn't get any. But anyway, so that's when the air war started into North Vietnam, and I was on that. And it was about 2:10 in the afternoon, and we lost three people. No, we didn't. We lost three airplanes, and all three were rescued. You know, those people in the Confidant. And one of them had been shot down on his first mission in North Korea. And the other two, been around a while. One of them was on Robbie Reisner's wing. He was an ace in Korea and flew in World War II. He eventually had his picture on the cover of Time magazine.
Okay.
67 Squadron. My friend Boris was on his wing. Got nailed, and planes, you know, all the warning lights are on. He jumped out, and he got about over two hills, and he got him out. So that was the beginning. And Rolling Thunder ended in 1968, when Johnson said, okay, well, we're not going into the Hanoi area anymore, and Rolling Thunder's over. All of that. When the war first started, and I'm using that, let's say January of 1965, there were 495 F-105Ds. That was a single seat, the most current version. The other versions didn't get no more. And by the end of 1968 or early 69, we'd only lost 397 of them in combat. So a plane shot down. Well, three things can happen. Dead right there, or on parachute doesn't open, you get killed in the cockpit, you get on the ground and or died there. Or you can be captured, or you can be rescued. And but there wasn't that many of us. I mean, there were just two bases. Mm-hmm. And each base had maybe, I don't know, at one time they had 75 airplanes and probably 100 pilots. And so in any event, the loss rate was something like this. 50% of the pilots who went over there and flew the 105 were shot down. Just 50%. But if you're rescued, you went back to the squadron, went at it. I know guys were shot down 3 times.
Okay.
And once and never came back. So it was kind of a personal war. And in South Vietnam, our F-100 pilots, they had 4 bases of them, but they weren't equipped to go to North Vietnam. The speed, they had wet wings and hit him in the wing, you know, fire. And mm-hmm. That was a plane developed in the 55, 56 after Korea. And he was using it for close air support, night and day, sitting alert at night, go out, find the friendlies and give them a hand. And so it went, and wasn't getting anywhere. They weren't quitting, and we weren't winning. But we were playing offense, and they were playing defense. And, of course, I won't get too deeply into it, but the men who ended up in the prison camps of Hanoi, it's impossible to give them due credit for the incredible torture that they went through. I mean, they wanted them to write things bad about the country. Very few of them said, oh, yeah, I'll do that, but not the stalwart patriots. Remember Robbie Reiser, who I previously mentioned, he was in solitary confinement. He was the rank and everything. He was the leader. You weren't allowed to talk to anybody, but you could pass a note. And then finally we got the TAP code, and you've heard about that. Mm-hmm. And by the way, that TAP code, the book by Smitty Harris and his wife, that is the story about how the TAP code got him going. And it's the only book I've read, and I've been aware of a lot of them, that has the wife writing half the book and the husband and the feelings they had on the same days. Well, anyhow, Robbie, they didn't like the way he was behaving or misbehaving to them. 17 months in solitary. Now, I don't mean like, I'm kind of forget his name, Devil's Island.
Put him
in there. And then the other one where over in Europe where he was riding, you know, during, they put him in solitary and he'd throw a ball and there was no light.
Yes.
None. Darkness. Maybe a radio station talking about how wonderful communism was. And they'd slip some food under the door. And I think he got out about at night, maybe 15 minutes, come back in. Still wouldn't talk.
Yeah.
Well, that's just some of it. Then there's the physical, and Jeremiah Denton, I think, he wrote the book When Hell Was in Session.
Yes, yeah. I read. Okay.
And he came and said, they had that speaker in my room. I said, one night, God, you got to do something about that speaker. And in 5 minutes, it quit. Anyway, I'm getting off subject, I guess. But then there was the phony war. We didn't take our airplanes back. We didn't take our troops back. Phony war really started in 69. And the Air Force wasn't really going north. They went into Laos. Mm-hmm. But I think in 1969, we might have lost 8 105s, 8 or 9, instead of, 120 or 30. In 70, lost one in Laos. Laos had no MiGs, missiles or something, a lot of guns. And then in 71, things started heating up a little bit, but in 72, Nixon sent his guy, Kissinger, to go talk to Cho En Lai, Mao's guy, make some arrangement that they said, we're leaving, but we're not running. And that arrangement was made. Of course, Mao wanted Taiwan. That's foremost, that's not going to happen. And there was a rather harmless agreement. you know, Chinese and the Vietnamese are ethnic enemies. And so during linebacker two, the second night, could have been the third, one wave of the B-52s, 100, maybe 33 or 4 of them, exited through southern China, and China did not respond. Well, you can see them now, and the guy's looking at their radar scopes in Hanoi. Oh, this is not good. And, of course, Lee Doc Tho, who replaced Ho Chi Minh, was in Paris with the peace talks with Kissinger. There's a cable. We were reading their messages, underwater cable. And I don't know who was running the Politburo then, but he sent a message, you must stop, you must negotiate this quickly, or the people will not be with us. And that's what happened. And that was, Paris Peace Accords were signed January the 23rd of 1973. Linebacker 2, by the way, it was 11 days of Christmas, 19 to 29 December of 72. And all of it went to Hanoi, some to Haiphong. And it was, I remember the first night I was back there, and we had a section of us that had to go look for the crews for B-52s that were shot down. I didn't lose that many. I thought they'd lose more. But the first night they had 126 B-52s with 120 500-pound bombs going to downtown Hanoi. It would be impossible for anybody to imagine what that would be like. And now there's no off-limit targets except for our POW camps. Mm-hmm. Well, it took 11 days. We quit. Of course, in April the 25th, some people say April the 30th, the North, and there wasn't any North then, but they came down and went unopposed into Saigon, mm-hmm. because the Democratic House and Senate cut the funding that had been, the United States of America had verified it would work the July before. Mm-hmm. And so we abrogated on a sacred treaty, and of course we're still doing it like Afghan withdrawal. You don't want to trust these politicians. It's all about power and IMEI. And I don't trust any of them. But I got ahead of myself. And so I was, when I came back from the war, I was sent to the Army Command and Staff College. And I thought, it's odd, but it was in Fort Leavenworth. And the Air Force sent 7 a year. Their yes. class was about 1,000, maybe 1,100. Okay. They had over 150 officers from allied nations, okay. and the Navy and the Marine Corps. Not a lot for joint operability. You don't just want the Army acting like the Army. They have to cooperate with the Navy and the Air Force. And that was somewhat lacking. And now there's about 50 or 60 Air Force people in that school. Mm-hmm. I thought, oh my God, but I loved it. I mean, I just loved it.
Why?
Because I got to, I was in section 13, I believe there was, right now I can't do 47 or 48. All the people in my room, almost all, were young, my age, Army guys that had been shot at, and Allied officers from different nations. It was a sort of a big picture thing, and it was quite exciting. And anyway, we stayed there a year, and then you were going to be assigned another assignment, and I'm afraid I'd go to the Pentagon, and I was thinking about resigning, but I'd go to the Pentagon. Instead, I was asked to stay there and teach the history of air warfare for 3 years. Mm-hmm. Wow. That was wonderful. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, I remember one of the classes, just as a technique, I had, I had British, I had German, I had American, I had our Air Force, and I forget, there was one other country that was involved in World War II. So I said, we're going to discuss the Battle of Britain and leading to what? The purpose of the course, did nations use their monies to properly develop an Air Force, and what happens to those that did and didn't? And I said, we'll have to use some examples. So I said, we're going to do that. Now, what's going to happen is I'm going to show you the movie, the next class, the whole movie, the Hollywood version. But you are going to watch it as if you were one of the people there. You will be Churchill. You will be Goering. You will be Hitler. You will be Raeder, the German Navy. I had two German officers there. And you will be, you know, and you will be doubting the Air Force guy, Air Marshal and all this stuff. And I want you to look at it from their point of view. And when we get back the following class, it's like you're died and gone to heaven. And you're going to have an opportunity to say, why did you do this and why didn't that work? Mm-hmm. It was amazing the effort that went into it. The Germans, when a German or a Norwegian or a Jap or an Israeli is there, if they want something, facts for it, or they're going to get it from their country. So essentially, and then I'll quit on this, Churchill said asked Hitler, why didn't you invade England? And he was a German, and he said, you will have to ask Raeder. Raeder was the chief of the Navy. Mm-hmm. Raeder said, well, it would take us, we had to get 3.5 divisions across the channel in one day to be able to dig in and have any hope of conquering those pesky fighters in Britain. And to do that, we would have had to take in all the barges that carried food from the fields through the canals to the cities to be turned into food. We would never get any of those barges back because it's going to go across the English Channel. You never get any of that back. I mean, ships, yes, barges, they're not built for that. Mm-hmm. And, of course, then we'd have to wait for a calm day, which almost never happens, and all that stuff that happened to the English years ago. So he said, after he told me that, I thought, well, I think we've got to go against Russia because that's where the oil and the food was. He forgot to mention that Germany only had about 70 million people, mm-hmm. and it wasn't Russia, it was the Soviet Union, and they had over 480 million.
Yes.
And at a certain point, quantity becomes quality. So it was very enjoyable, and I thought it was a good way to, you know, get things
done.
And so I enjoyed that sort of teaching. It was really amazing. And I learned so much, oh my God, about World War I in particular. And I always tell people, if you want to understand World War I and why it happened, you've got to read Dreadnought by Massey. And the reason for that is they were going to build this incredible battleship and the taxes that were required. But furthermore, you got to meet every political leader in Europe, discussed. And then the Guns of August by Barbara Tuchman, I said, you will meet them all there. And then if you really want to know what happened in the war, read B.H. Liddell Hart that covers the war, all of it.
Liddell Hart.
And because that'll take you down to the battalion level, till you see how the war was executed by both sides. By both sides, anyway. So anyway, that was fun. And by the way, my friend Chuck Boyd, who I just can't say enough, shot down twice and captured the second time. Parachute opened about 20 feet in the air, hit the ground hard. 22nd of April of 1966. And he went through it all and then came back. And he had not gone to college. He had 2 years of college so he could be an aviation cadet. So he gets back and lots of time to reflect in prison. And one of them was, fighter pilots are rascals. They're running around with airline stews and everything else. And he was married. So the wife waited for him. And she said, I waited for you, but there's going to have to be some changes. And Chuck was in bed in San Antonio. I forget the hospital, Brooks, I think. And he said, I thought about that too. What I would like to do is, I'm going to tell you something. I learned a lot up there, and I made some horrible mistakes in life. He told me later, he made every effort in life to rectify those mistakes, but some of them were irreparable, and I will take those to the grave. So anyway, they did. They renewed their vows. So they said, would you like to go back to college and get your degree? Yes. She lived in Oklahoma. He lived in northern Iowa. So he picked KU because it was halfway. And he went and got a house in the country. He wasn't really wanting to go tell everybody about the war. And she got a job teaching, I think. And in any event, after 2 years, I said, you're really doing well. Would you like to get a degree in international relations? And he did. I'll run on with this. Eventually gets to be a four-star general. And the wife, while he was a four-star general, he was the number two man in Europe. And she died of cancer, long cancer. And they retired, and then he was the chairman for the group. It's called National Interest. Nixon started it, but it had Kissinger in it, and it had the Republican that was Speaker of the House, and I've given his name.
McCain.
So he became chairman of that, and then he started taking up flying again. And we got reacquainted as soon as he came back. And so he got widowed, and he ends up marrying Barbara Tuchman's daughter, Jessica.
Okay.
He got to meet her. I said, well, yeah, I used your book. I'm not sure this is, Carl, whether you're interested in it at all.
This is all interesting. I do want to hear.
Yes.
Okay, you said you keep mentioning. Okay, when did you say that they opened up North Vietnam and allowed you to go in and do your job? When did they allow you to go into North Vietnam and do your job?
They allowed us into North Vietnam. You're talking about in combat, not visiting after the war. Okay, yeah. No, I'm making sure.
Okay.
Well, at Linebacker 2 on March of 65, they were supposed to go in there, and it was called a gradual escalation to convince them to be good boys. We all looked at each other and said, all you're going to do is piss them off, and they're going to fight harder. You should start with Hanoi and work down.
Yes. Yeah. On that, one of them mentioned that you had 275 jobs, and you started with the least and then went up to the highest in Hanoi.
Oh, those were the targets from the General Chiefs of Staff. You couldn't pick your own targets. Professionals couldn't pick the targets. We know how to run war. That's what, that's what you go to Fort Leavenworth and stuff for. Oh, no. You're just going to, over time. And then, of course, the Russians and the Chinese were sending them thousands of anti-aircraft weapons and munitions. I mean, if we'd have gone up there on March the 2nd, they wouldn't have had anything but a Red Ryder BB gun. And, that's before your time.
No, I had one. Go on.
Anyway, it was just fool's gold. And but that's when we were now, where we went up there unrestricted was Linebacker 2. Just 11 days. Worked out pretty well.
Yes.
We went down there where they lived.
Yes.
And we just backwards. You know, I got to give Hitler credit. When he went into Russia, he went in with everything he had. Damn near made it. But he forgot winter. And the reason the reason was it was a month late getting started. They're going in there, and the Italians were supposed to handle Greece. They couldn't handle a ping pong game. And so now he can't go because the Allies are in there on the flank, not good. So we had to stop. sent four of his divisions down there to maintain law and order, and then got going in June, which he should have got going probably last of April, when the ground firmed up, last of April, beginning of May. Mm-hmm. And I think he might have made it, but they got 70 miles from Moscow, and the weather turned cold. They didn't have any winter clothes. They were Germans. They didn't need that stuff. They were going to be war builder. And how it happened, so they dug in, and the Soviets counterattacked, pushed them back about 100 miles, could have been 125. Well, as most wars in Europe go, they wait till spring. Mm-hmm. But then Hitler split his forces into three. Group North was to go to St. Petersburg, Group Center was to take Moscow, and Group South was to go to Stalingrad. None of the three worked. My take is when they drove them back, or when they sent the divisions to Greece, that was probably the tipping point. But once Paulus surrendered the 6th Army, in about maybe 200,000 or 300,000 soldiers, only 17,000 lived through it. And Manstein couldn't, he was gone over there, great general, couldn't stop it. Russians ran out of people. In the Battle of Kursk in Ukraine, Germans thought they had it. This is it. They called up the youngest conscripts. They built new, big, powerful tanks. And so the battle starts, and they wanted to flank them and go into the front. So they sent the tanks out. You know, tanks don't go through ponds like you see in the movies. It's flat ground or roads. And so the Soviet tanks start coming over the here, big tank, boom, tank, boom, boom.
Yes.
But in about 5 minutes, over 2,500 Soviet tanks came over the hill.
Yes.
Uh-oh. Well, then it's just a matter of, well, you're never going to win.
You would have thought they had read their Napoleon.
So anyway, they forgot Napoleon.
I'm sorry.
Never get into
a land war in Asia.
Except Napoleon got into Moscow, but there wasn't any food.
Yes.
And they'd burned all the wood, you know. So.
Well, that brings up another one. If an army fights on its stomach,
yeah.
Did you ever go without?
No, of course not.
So, I'm sorry, with all the stuff going on, you always had planes, you always had repairs.
Yes.
You always had support staff.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Nobody was attacking our bases. Okay. We were in Thailand.
Okay.
And a few times in South Vietnam, they'd have a rocket attack on a Benoit and get a few airplanes. They never occupied any of our bases in South Vietnam. Never.
Okay. So you never felt want or need, and you always had you always had ammunition?
Everything.
You always had everything you needed.
Well, so we were running out of air. Oh, and then McNamara canceled the order for the last 800 105s to buy F-4s, a Navy airplane, because he thought all the surfaces ought to be flying the same airplane for economic reasons and spare parts. Well, You just can't beat that, can you?
Okay.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah? Okay, how long were you in service? Because you were there at the beginning. How long?
How long was I in the Air Force?
How long were you in Vietnam?
Oh, well, you see, there's that. Let's just put it this way. I flew in the war during parts of 64, 65, 66, 68, 69, 72, and 73.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It might have been 2 months, or it might have been 6 months, or...
But it was part of each year.
Not 67, but then the phony war of 70 and 71. I was still in the U.S. Air Force Fighter Weapons School after I left the 12th Squadron, and we always kept a pilot in one of the three airplanes in use, the 105, the 100, or the F-4, in the squadrons. I mean, and if they needed any, well, we were helpful. And that's how I got a lot of my missions. And so I got to see the air war develop, and then being in linebacker too. there was four, maybe five of us at Karat who'd been on the first mission in March 2nd of 65. And when we were being briefed on it, they said, it's B-52s all night, and the UA-7, I had to fly A-7s then, 105s were gone. But I'd spent 2 years in the A-7 operational test and evaluation squadron.
Were comfortable with this.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And I'd been a flight commander. That was over, and I'd been a flight commander in an A-7 wing. Mm-hmm. It was right there at Tucson where I'd finished the test. And I got to be D flight commander in 354 squadron. That's not worth writing down. But I said, man, I don't know how it's been around here before, but I'm going to get you ready for war. Look, Vietnam's not over. Mm-hmm. Cold War's not over. We're not here to go out to a gunnery range, come back, and go to the bar. We are going to learn how to fight wars. A wing of A-7s was tasked to go back to Karat. Not back, over to Karat, because peace talks had stalled. But they weren't manned for more wartime. And so this was in September, that all was going on, of 72. But they needed more pilots, and we were the only other fighter wing with A-7s. So I volunteered my flight and got to do it.
Okay.
And I had some warriors in my flight. I had Tom King, who'd had a tour in F-4s, 105s, went to Laos, was a Raven FAC. Whatever, nobody knows about those, but...
I don't. What is that?
They were flying forward air control airplanes to find targets to help General Vang Pao's army. The war in Laos never been covered very well. But there's in my five best, there's that book.
Yes.
If you're interested. I'm not talking down to you at all.
Oh, no.
But,
I got it.
But in any event, we got there, and I'm telling you, we did good work. I didn't lose anybody. Mm-hmm. And we...
How many missions did you go?
You mean for the whole war?
Well, when you were with the Raven FAC, how many missions did you fly at that time?
I wasn't a Raven FAC.
Oh, excuse me. I know. Forgive me.
Yeah. I just said Tom had a background in it.
Right.
But I knew he was a warrior, and I didn't need to explain to him anything about war. And Mike Guth had a year in South Vietnam in F-100s. But the rest of them had not seen war.
You mean they were young?
Of course they were young.
How young? Because I'm thinking 19.
Fred Buell was the youngest, and I think he was, I don't know, he'd go to college, he'd go to the pilot training, 23 maybe, 24.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was born in 39. We're talking 72. 40. I was 33, I guess. Been a major for a while. And that's about it. I mean,
that's a lot.
Well, then, after the Paris Peace Accords, I guess we're all done. No, Cambodia wasn't part of the Paris Peace Accords. So a lot of the bad guys went to Cambodia to continue their great hope for communism. Okay. By the end of January, after the Paris Peace Accords, we're going to war in Cambodia. Not on the ground. The Cambodians, the people down there, we were given AMER support. And my last mission over there was on June, 23rd or 24th of 73. I ended up with about 481 hours of combat time, and over about 120 missions into North Vietnam. You just don't go up there and come right back. It'd be like going from London to Berlin and back. But we were going fast. Took about 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
We would, cruise speed was, 480 knots, and so about the same distance, as a little more maybe. Takli was further away than Korat. Anyway.
How many years did you spend of your total life in service?
Yeah, well, I can, that was some precision, from August of 1961 to June the 30th of 1985. 25 years.
Okay.
Yeah, loved it. Man, I mean, people were competent, had integrity. First things first. I just thought it was great. I'd do it all over again, and again and again. You know, this nonsense you see anymore around here.
Would you join the modern army?
I'm sorry, I'm not hearing you.
Would you join the modern military? It's different than it was.
Well, I know that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking about the question. Well, and I was, I mean, now I'm older, so I have to put myself in a mindset of being
in your 20s.
19 or so.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I know how, you know, the old story, you know, things aren't as good as they used to be, and somebody, yeah, but maybe they never were. But so I guess compared to what, you know? The chief of staff of the Air Force now said in 2 years he wants the majority, white people, to be in the majority of officers. Now think about that.
In the majority?
The majority of...
The minority, yeah.
Yeah, he does not want white officers in the majority. I mean, we've got 6% of the population is male blacks, and of that, about maybe 2% are fit for
service.
No, no, we got to get them in there because, you know, somebody bought a slave somewhere. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I mean, it's so bad. It kind of reminds me of Rose Perry and the French Revolution. 1787.
Yes.
Things got so bad to the people that they didn't care. They were, you know, just a few causing it. But it, and then the guillotine became, I mean, and I say Rose Perry, it wasn't his name, it was Rep. It begins with an A and it's got a lot of syllables and consonants in it. But he finally was killed. Who could? But I think we should let Biden eat tea, eat cake. You know, that, oh, I mean, that's what he's saying to us. Let them eat cake. It was not a good statement she made.
No, and I'm not sure she made it.
Well, who
I'm
is
not sure
about
she
anything
did.
That said, but it didn't end well.
No, but part of that was lack of education and training of any value.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's kind of what's going on now. We don't have education. We have indoctrination.
Yes.
And we do not have the ability to speak freely, because if you do, like Tucker Carlson, you'll be gone.
Yeah. I think he may make more money in the long run than he did before.
Well, money's really not going to do...
I know. You know. But he is reaching a larger audience.
How?
Fox News has lost over half of its viewership.
I know that.
Newsmax is picking it up.
Is he going to be on TV, or is he just... I saw it in the journal today, or yesterday, I read about that. Mm-hmm. But it didn't come clear to me. Of course, what do I know about anything anymore? But it wouldn't be clear to me what kind of role he would have. It's funny, they left Hannity alone. Or maybe they're just going to sequence him out.
I don't know. But the founder of Fox News just died.
Yes, and of course.
And yeah, that made...
He did. And I think his wife was speaking for him, and what went on with that. I hadn't read the complete issue. But
I'm to the point where I don't think I ever get a full... I don't get all the information.
Well, nobody does.
So how do you make an informed decision?
I think you think about what probably happened in a non-political way.
That's hard.
For instance, we're shooting them in the toes when all we had to do is for a couple of days to go up there. I mean, no, we all felt that way.
If you served for 25 years, what age were you when you left the service?
Well, let's see. My birthday's July 31st.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was 1985. Let's do this. No, you take 1931 from 1930. I was, 44.
Okay, you're still a young man.
Well, I mean...
What did you go to next?
Well, I'll tell you what I did. I bought my little Pitts airplane, and I was giving instruction and doing very well in competition.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started an aerobatic school, my own hometown. About 6 months later, I raced through it. People wanted to form an aerobatic team, a four-ship aerobatic team of Pitts.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked me if I'd be team leader, and I said I would. It'd be fun. And they were all fighter pilots from the war.
Mm-hmm.
And so that knew how to fly formation. You know, can't teach. You know, that has to come naturally to do this kind of thing. And we went on the road for 4 years. I mean, big shows. I mean, 24 locations a year. And after that, Lou Shattuck, who'd been a prisoner of war and could only see in one eye, but now, they didn't do that to him. It was being controlled. And then when he went down, medicine wasn't there. He got out and bought a Pitts, and he enjoyed life. And he's another one they sent to college. They did only 2 years, and he graduated summa cum laude from Troy College or University.
Mm-hmm.
And good pilot, and still get along. He's still alive. Took him and two others, and we worked the deck. And then I talked to Lou. I said, you know, Lou, every year we talk about what almost went wrong. I think we've had enough of this. We were never late for a show,
mm-hmm.
never had an accident.
Yes.
And the pay was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, I think I'll just go back to teaching aerobatics. And then I got the idea. When I was at Nellis, when I was in the weapons school, I came back to the weapons school. And not from the end of the war, but 1966. Couldn't believe it. I get to go to the weapons school. Jesus Christ. I mean, it's only 13 officers, and that was, I don't know how I got selected for them. I'm glad I did. I would fly to Kansas City, Richard Skibauer, occasionally, see the family, and I'd look down and I'd see this beautiful grass-crossed runway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, wow. And when I got out of the service, I thought, God, that'd be a wonderful place. And found out it was Harold Cryer's hometown. Well, he was, mm-hmm. that's the bloodlines of American aerobatics mm-hmm. right here. So I, and my wife Linda, aerobatic pilot, I mean,
mm-hmm.
30 points from being world champion in 1990 in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. She had a beautiful airplane, a French-built cap. That was the initials of the designer, all wooden. And so she let me use her airplane. I flew down. I called Bill Shaw, who was the mayor,
mm-hmm.
told him my idea, and he said, well, I asked if I could come down and talk about it. He said, yeah, come on down. Of course, he's a gracious man, Jan and him. And he said, you know, that sounds pretty good. He said, I got an idea. Why don't we just try it
mm-hmm.
and see if it works? So the first year we did, we tried it, worked great. And then there was some kind of a conflict between the people that were at the airport. So after 93, 94, the airport certainly wasn't available for 2 years. And I said, well, really, but if you're in the mood, just call us and come back. And we took it to a freight of Washington and other places. And we came back. We came back in 96 or 97. Oh, wait a minute. Not, yeah. I can't remember. Been here ever since.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm coming back, though. I mean, love it, but 84.
You're still a young pup.
I kind of feel that way. Well, until all the radiation and this.
Yes.
But, I don't know.
But if it's worth doing, please do it as long as you can.
Oh, I don't ask, tell me that. I mean, I just...
I know.
On my last day, I want to slide into third base with a big smile on my face.
Yes.
Yeah, safely.
It's more fun when the plane is reusable.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, yes, yeah. I had to eject once, all engine quit. It was out north of Nellis, and so I got hurt a little bit, but not bad. Mm-hmm. Anything
just,
I can do to, else
just
to help
you? Just looking
back,
when you think about serving in Vietnam, how do you feel about your service?
Great.
Okay, you knew you did what you were supposed to do to the best of your ability.
Yes, and we were... I mean, all of us, young, we were World War II boys. Well, the guys in Korea, mm-hmm. and Vietnam, Korea and World War II, we wanted to be like them. I mean, wing commander that had been shot down in World War II, shot down in Korea, he's back, mm-hmm. got led from the front, follow me type. Mm-hmm. You don't get to be around a lot of men, a lot of
people. Yes.
That, you know,
they were rock stars.
But they didn't act. I mean, you don't hear too many. If you hear a fighter pilot talking about too much about what he did, you think, this bears some scrutiny. We have our reunions, and I'm embarrassed. That used to click onto a most beautiful, and that comes on, but none of the other pictures do. That I could get on my.
Okay. I was looking at pictures of, they're interspersed. They are not just.
But you mean there's more? I could only get this on my iPhone, and I thought, and I felt bad. Oh, there we are. It's me.
Yes.
It's Bill Hosmer.
Yes.
Oh, you got the whole thing. This is wonderful.
I contacted these people this morning.
Yeah.
And he is overseas and said he doesn't have good cell service. But his office staff is going to ask him if I could put this on my.
You mean
website.
Cade Martin? Oh, Cade Martin's a great guy. And the girl, Kate Chase,
she's the one
that talked to Ed Scowron and got it going. She died of a disease here about 2 years ago.
Okay.
Oh, my golly, it's still alive. Oh, look at that beautiful 105. Oh, my God.
See, I know.
And I know every one of those guys I know and have flown with. Every single one.
And they included, this is just an incredible site. I'm so glad you shared it with
me.
And I've asked them if they would let me. It depends on what they have to charge, because this is professional level.
Use my name.
I kind of did.
Well,
I said that you shared the link with me.
Yes.
Because this is such an incredible site.
Oh, no, there's Piawati. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Look at it.
So your phone didn't allow you to see the whole thing?
No. It's just...
Okay.
I remember him. And that's Ed Scowron, who got shot down.
Yes.
Oh, God, he was... he's now is going blind, and I talk to him every day. If you read every word... Especially when Cade Martin writes this little piece.
Yes.
He said, you know, the men talk freely.
It's at the very end.
Oh, yeah. It's just unbelievable.
And
wait a minute. Put that. You see that guy in the middle?
Yes.
Are you young enough to remember Have Gun, Will Travel, Paladin? That's Paladin.
The heart of a man.
No, but that's Paladin.
Okay.
I mean, he's his dead brother. I mean, a dead ringer for Paladin.
Yes. Well,
and if you go up a little bit, you can see he's got a six-shooter. And on his plane, you see on his right side?
Oh, good grief, you're right.
Yeah. And he put on his plane, Have Gun, Will Travel.
Okay.
Oh, man. And the guy on his left was the guy that... A sad story. They're coming back from that mission where we lost six in about 2 minutes. that first SAM site, right? Anyway, his plane was horribly damaged, and another guy, and so they finally got back into Thailand, and one was looking at, and then the controls went, and they, and that was a Barthelmess, and he jumped out, but the chute didn't open. They got the body, and they brought it back to Karat. So there's a C-141 sitting on the ramp with the back open, and there's Bart in his forever box, you know, like a, and they put the box on, and Will, the dear friend of his, no wallet, no nothing, gets an American flag, gets up there, puts the flag on Bart's box, and lays on top of it. And all the officers said, "You can't do that, get him out of there." And the wing commander, who'd been in two wars, said, "He can do whatever he goddamn wants and come back when he wants. Now shut up." And Will went, rode that casket all the way to McConnell Air Base in Wichita.
And he had to meet the family.
Okay. I don't know. I think he was just thinking about Bart. And the guy next to him, one of the first guys, Bart, that was Bruce Holmes. They said we used to look, some of them mixed us up together. But he said, he goes back to McConnell teaching people how to fly the 105 instructor. And they had a, he had a house rented, Jack Redmond with him, thud driver. So Bruce and his lady friend was a nurse, and they were at the house, and she said, "Well, I've got to go. I'm a nurse." He said, "Well," she said, "Would you drive me?" He said, "Well, my car's out there. Just take it to work, bring it back." Then he goes down the hall in his bedroom. Then Jack and his girlfriend come there, and they're not there long, and they see fire coming from down there. They never knew he was there. They got out of the house. And all the thing in the morning they saw was his teeth by the door, because the fire was there and the windows were barred to keep thieves. So there's, I would say, those are three men to deal, they have to deal with. They just wonderful guys. And Will just died here about 6 months ago. Anyway, I'm sorry I got carried away.
I was so glad you shared this with me.
Tony Cushenberry just died. I mean, look at that face. It'll tell you all the stories you need to know. And that's our, that's picture right there.
Yes.
Is us sitting by our shack an hour and a half before we took off to go on the March 10th mission. The first, and on the left is Tom Boatman. There's me. There's Charlie Copen, our flight commander. There's Matt Kelch. And up in the door, there's Sam, I can't remember his name. And there's Ray Moss, and then there's Frank Tulo. And none of us had been to war. So we weren't pilots yet. We were pilots who flew fighters, but when we came back, we were fighter pilots. And I think one... Well, that's mine. I don't kind
of. Excuse me, I was making sure it wasn't.
If it's important, they'll call back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because if he will, I don't know if he will allow me to borrow some of his pictures, because I would put them in with your interview if you will let me.
Sure. Listen, do anything you want. You do it, and if they don't like it, say, "I promise never to do it again." I mean, that's how that works.
I do try to do as people ask me to, but he took fantastic portraits.
There's Chuck Boyd, the one I was telling you about in the middle.
Yes.
Wow. Oh, my God. I mean,
when
this
was this done?
I didn't hear you.
When was this done?
Yes, I think I can tell you it was shown in San Antonio at our, I believe, 2017. But I've got a phone here. I can call Ed Scour and tell you and find out the exact date.
Well, I should be able to find it. Oh, and here's his statement.
Oh, yeah. If you can read that.
I did.
You can understand fighter pilots. We can't talk to anybody else. Oh, look at that.
Yes.
Look at that. Oh, that was the flight line before the first mission into North Vietnam.
Okay.
Oh, God. Beautiful, beautiful airplanes. They remind me of the 1955 Jaguar Pearls. You know, they just, somebody knew what they were doing. Designer on that was a Russian.
Really?
Yeah, they got out of Russia.
Well,
Well, yeah. No. You know that we are going to promote this and the interviews, and I'm trying to have everything done by Memorial Day.
You mean by Monday?
I work hard.
God.
Okay.
I hardly work.
But the deal is that you knew that all the people that I could, I've already done their interviews
sure.
and made them, and I will try to get this done.
Don't, listen, don't even bother with
sorry,
that.
Sorry, it matters.
Yeah.
It matters to us.
Well, yeah, but it doesn't matter to do it this Memorial Day. I mean, who knows?
Well, I'm trying, just because.
Yeah.
It was people like Rick Beeley.
Yeah.
He painted that watercolor because he said that's what it looked like after he dropped his bombs.
Okay. Well, Rick's the one that found that, and I went out there. And I found that headstone, and
yes.
I took pictures of it. Did I
yes.
send you some of the pictures?
You did not. Of course, I could go. I only live a couple miles from that cemetery.
Well, but it's hard to find it. I mean, but
okay.
I talked to Rick, and he taught me how to walk out of the place where all the mystery. He said, go right, go forward. What is the row, this or this?
Yes.
Oh, I got to show you this.
Well, you can send it to me.
We'll do this right now so
yes.
we know it's getting done.
And it'll be, yes.
You bet.
Do you need more water, sir? Okay.
Oh, this is great. Okay.
No, you just have to talk to the right people. That's all.
Oh, I know that line.
Yeah.
And, okay. 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 Okay.
Oh, you have my email.
Well, let me do this. Okay, I'm going to forward. You want email or text?
Email is better for
okay.
me.
Okay.
If you can do it.
Okay, just start me off on your thing, and then I'll pick it up. Your email
yeah.
address.
That's it.
Okay.
A-S-H-L-I-B.
Okay, Ash L-B?
Yes.
A-S-H, oh, A-S-H,
L-I-B.
Oh, here it is, right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to go whoosh.
Yes.
Go whoosh.
I'm waiting for the whoosh.
Oh, actual size. You want the big one, don't you?
You can go small and I will make it bigger. No. Sometimes it won't accept the large.
Yes, it will.
Okay, then you do it.
Okay. Now, God damn it, go whoosh. Well, I can tell you how I'm going to do this. I'm going to go find out if it's sent.
Well, you could also send it to my... You can send it to my phone if you want to.
Let's just find out. I'm going to go to sent.
Okay. I didn't hear it either.
There it is.
It
no,
went?
No, it didn't. Oh, here it is. It finally got there.
All right.
And then... God damn it.
I get it. It's cool.
Oh, I only have LTE here. I don't have...
full bars.
Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
There it is. LTE did it. Okay.
Larry Dean. I will have to ask about him because I do not know that name.
Let me tell you something. Mm-hmm. Let's look at this.
Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Come on now. Get back to us. All right. Now, oh, crap.
It's okay. Just.
There.
Okay. But what about Larry
Dean?
I want
to show it to you because stay where you are, and
okay.
I'll lay it here. Kansas Major Air Force.
Yes.
Korea in Vietnam.
Yes.
Two wars. That's SS means a silver star with an oak leaf cluster.
What does that mean?
That means he has two silver stars. They don't give, you're awarded it, but instead of having, you just put a cluster on it. That is a big deal. That's the third highest award in the Air Force. Then, Distinguished Flying Cross and three oak leaf clusters. That means he's got four Distinguished Flying Crosses, Air Medal, and 15 oak leaf clusters. That's a big deal.
How do you earn those?
Combat. Only combat.
Okay.
Only combat.
And he died of natural causes at home?
No, he shot himself.
Okay. Mm. After he got home?
Well, not right after. He got home. He came back from that war, and he went to Nellis, and he was a 105 instructor. And then they sent him to TAC headquarters. Now, nice. And we knew when he got shot... And just me, I think he was really good at war. But when he got into the office and the paperwork and dealing with people...
He wasn't good at peace.
Okay. And I'm sure there were other things, and who knows. But I do know this. He took a shotgun shell for dessert.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't know if it was a shotgun, but...
But I'm ashamed because I've lived in Comanche County most of my life.
Yeah.
And I've never heard of him. And well, I will have to ask
about it. Here's what Rick said. He said... I got to think he shot himself because of that wife. I mean, she came out here and she was holy hell. Comanche County's dry. And he said, she said, well, where's a bar? Where's a liquor store? There aren't any. Well, somebody's got to get me a bottle. And I thought, just get rid of her.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
She didn't fit in well. Okay.
Well, we had another guy or two that came back and, you know, he'd done well and was going to move up, but...
Yeah.
Well, you know what I'm talking about. They all change when they come back.
But
anyway.
Is there anything that you would like the next generation, the young kids that I am helping with this,
mm-hmm.
is there anything you would like them to understand about your service?
My service?
Mm-hmm.
No. Just that it was a great honor.
Mm-hmm.
Go to war
mm-hmm.
for our precious blood earned republic.
Mm-hmm.
You can put it in simpler terms. If you want to learn a new language, you want to have not a cent of your money left over and not get to vote or do anything, you just keep on doing what you're doing. And it'll happen more quickly than you think. The deep state doesn't want the people to find out what they've been doing. So now they're in the, oh my God, we got to protect ourselves. And to do that, we have to get the FBI, the Department of Justice, everybody to get on the same sheet of false music. And I don't know why people don't see that, obviously. I'm sorry, I'm not, oh, goodness gracious.